Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families for 100 years. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
From the CME Group in Chicago, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you from 20 South Wacker Drive on this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 29th day of June. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jerry Golke of the Golke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. Drew Lerner will be here to tell us where that rainfall will come across the Midwest and how Central Illinois may very well benefit. And then we'll discuss just a little bit about the CME Group with the Managing Director of Agricultural Products, Tim Andreessen. And it all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
I hear the way the numbers finished up in Chicago at the CME Group. Corn futures were lower. Nearby July contract down 12.5 cents at $3.72¾. September 3.77¾, 11 lower, and December down 11.25 at 3.83. March corn 10.5 lower at 3.90¼. July of next year down 10.75, $3.97½ the settlement price. Soybeans $11.44½, 6 lower in the July. August at $11.40½, down 5¾. November 7¾ lower at $11.12½, and the January soybeans at $11.08½, down 8¼. Next year's March at 10.73½, down 7¼. July down 8 cents at $10.58¼. Bean oil futures 29 cents lower at $30.82, and the bean meal at $3.97.10, up $4.70. Soft red winter wheat, July contract at $4.29½, 14¼ lower. December at $4.65¼, down 11¾. The hard red at $4 even, down 8¾ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago finished the nearby June at $119. That's $1.92½ higher. August there up $1.37¼ to $114.10. August feeders at $143.27½, up $2.60. And lean hogs for the day at $82.97½ for 100 pounds, up 17½ cents. Some of the outside markets at this hour show us the crude oil at $49.83, $1.97 higher. Ethanol futures up a penny and a tenth at $1.59¾. The wholesale price of gasoline 2½ higher at $1.53. And heating oil or diesel fuel up 6 cents at $1.53¼. You're listening to Illinois Public Media.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 13th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's ag programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold can be found at AgriGold.com.
Here's what some of the rest of the outside markets look like. The Dow Jones Industrial Average up 269 points at 17,570. The U.S. dollar is down 0.516 at 95.815. The euro trading at 1.11 is up 0.005, and gold futures for the day at $1,325.10, up $10.20. The weather forecast for the Urbana-Champaign area says this afternoon a high of 78 degrees, sunny skies, winds light and variable. Tonight, partly cloudy, low of 57 with winds light and variable. And then Thursday, sunshine, clouds, a high of 82, south winds at 5 to 10. Thursday evening, partly to mostly cloudy skies, some scattered thunderstorms before midnight, a low of 36 degrees on a southwest wind at 5 to 10. A chance of rainfall on Thursday evening set at 40%. Friday, 10% chance of rainfall, intervals of clouds, a high of 79. Saturday, sunny along with a few clouds, a high of 79. Sunday, rain, 90% chance, 75 degrees, winds out of the east, southeast at 10 to 15. Again, that chance of rain on Sunday set at 90%, with about a half an inch of accumulation. On Sunday night, periods of rain, potentially heavy, a low of 64, chance of rain again, 90%, over an inch is expected.
Since 1985, Stuart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information is available at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason at the CME Group's Chicago building on South Wacker Drive. That's on 20 South Wacker. And down at the Chicago Board of Trade. To the south of me is Jerry Gulkey from the Gulkey Group. Hi, Jerry. How are you today?
Good. Came in out of the field and too early to spray beans the second time, so I thought I'd come to the office for a while. And it was a pretty exciting day.
It was an exciting day. Why were futures lower?
Well, you know, I think you had Drew Lerner on earlier, and also we saw some of the weather patterns shift again and bringing more rain into the dry areas. So as a friend of mine says, the good areas got bigger and the dry areas got smaller or will get smaller. And this is one of those, remember a week or so ago they talked about three systems coming across. Well, this is probably number three, and then I think it's supposed to warm up after that. But a lot of these areas that needed the rain are apparently going to get it. Now, whether it magnifies enough that we get the kind of amounts that they're saying is another thing. But we have clients in South Carolina that said they've had an 80% chance of rain the last 2 days, and all they've gotten is a tenth of an inch. So some weather guys are saying that we're not fulfilling the expectations. So we'll see how this plays out. But still some hot air coming back in, I think, in about a week. So that'll probably be a market driver the other way, we hope.
That'll be just about the time that we get ready to pollinate, at least in some of the earliest areas. It won't be very long after that, so we're looking forward to some heat. But we're going into it, I suppose, in much better condition if this rain comes through, as suspected, than many thought just a couple of days ago. Let's get to that point, which will happen tomorrow, 11 o'clock a.m. Central Time. USDA will release the acreage and the grain stocks figures. What are your thoughts at this point?
Well, I'm probably on the fringe again, and our March 30th report or survey that we did was at 94 million in corn, and the government was at 93.6, I believe. I think their number will actually increase in corn a little bit, and maybe get closer to 94 million. A lot of people disagree with that. They think we're going to pull acres out of corn and put them into the beans. We didn't see that at all in our resurvey at all, and in fact, we saw reluctance to do that. I think farmers had the mindset to do it, and someone brought up a point that said a lot of small farmers were giving up their farms and renting them out or whatever, and the larger farmer who's paying $300 an acre rent will likely want to plant corn, and because that seems like the only way he feels he can get a crop. And we heard a lot of this conversation about, I know I can grow above my APH. I've done it in the past, the last 3 years, whether you're in North Dakota all the way to, you know, Illinois, where we've seen some big increases in yields over APH, where in beans we've had difficulty time doing that. So I think that theme stayed there. But I do think that there's probably going to be that million acres more of beans. So we're looking at 1.4 million acres more. So that puts us at, I think, 83.6 or something like that, and 94 million corn. Now, I guess you got to wonder with corn down another dime today, does it make any difference anymore? Because corn looks like it's competing with wheat, and wheat should be, I would think, bearish because we're hearing out some just tremendous yields out of Kansas City. Or out of Kansas this year, that some just kind of like we heard about corn a couple of years ago, where it wasn't just a few percentage points, it was 20 and 30% and 40% more big yields in wheat. So we've got to compete now for feed wheat. And this presents a big problem for us in corn, and I think that's what we saw transpiring the last couple of weeks in corn.
Yeah, this probably will cap what happens in the corn market, I suppose, from your intentions. Yesterday we talked on air, as we do once a month, with Kansas Extension agent. He told us that wheat crop, as you said, was much, much larger, maybe 40% larger than expected. However, that with that much more crop, the protein numbers were down. So this could be a problem, I think, for corn for a long time.
Yeah, it could, and you know what happens when that occurs is that they discount that the poor quality stuff even worse. So you get the cash price down there pretty cheap. And I've heard cash prices as low as $3.10 a bushel, you know, in that area. And certainly after today, I suppose they're there. And that competes pretty well with corn. And but I did go back and look because you know how it is. Sometimes you bottom at the worst possible news. And we're getting some ideas by other people that do a little research and said that, you know, we could feed 250 million more bushels of wheat this year than we did last year. And I guess we normally feed about 160 million. I don't know if we're going to feed 400 million or not. But I went back and looked, and it's kind of interesting. On June 30th of 2016, that's the, you know, right where we're at tomorrow, we're at about a 430 low, I think 428 and a half. And June 30th of 2010, we hit 425 and a half. In September of 2009, we hit 425 and a quarter. So, you know, are we going to see large feed weeding wheat come in here on wheat and say, now we're going to somehow disappear that 900 million bushels and feed more of it? Does that put a bottom in this wheat market? And certainly if bad news puts in a bottom, you've got a monthly key reversal down in wheat if we do that today. But goodness, you're down, you know, it you have to go back a couple decades to see wheat in the low threes. And but it's been there. But it's kind of interesting. We are bad at levels now that you would wonder who'd want to plant wheat again.
Well, we'll be having to watch that. We'll have to watch the acreage. We'll also have to watch the grain stocks. You haven't talked about that figure. Although you've talked a lot about feeding, what do you think the numbers will look like tomorrow morning?
Well, I'm kind of inclined to believe that our crop wasn't quite as big last year as what we thought it was, and this is a good time for them to come in. But I really don't have a good quantitative analysis on the stocks. I think they'll look more at the acreages. I think the bottom line is that, and I look at the whatever the stocks are going to be for corn and soybeans, it's going to be real difficult to get a bullish scenario out there to disappear a couple hundred million more bushels of corn to get that carry out much lower. And we only got 2 months left in this marketing year, and in beans the same thing. I don't think you have a snowball's chance of running out of stocks before you harvest again. And we pretty much, extrapolated the good demand in corn that's going to come out because of South America into this market when we hit 440 and 450 a couple weeks ago. And that had priced in a pretty good drop in yield as well as an increase in demand for corn. But soybeans have probably got a carrot out there. My intentions are to re-own some soybeans this fall, maybe around that October 1st time frame, because we're going to be one of the only places that you're going to get beans to be shipped, and we need to ship them out of here pretty quickly before corn harvest. And I think at whatever the price is in October, I think we'll glean a dollar a bushel on the upside on them, unless we come in here with 3 million acres more beans, which I don't expect. But I think that beans have the best potential because of South America and going into the winter of getting some appreciation for their price. And I want to be ready for that, I guess. I don't want to sell 100% of my beans. I want to hold some of them over the winter.
Hey, one last item before I let you go, and we don't have much more than a minute left. The last time we talked, you had just made another cash sale and said that you were going to do it again when the markets moved back to some higher levels. Did you pull that off?
Yeah, we did. We did more last Monday, so it'd be a week ago this last Monday. We were at, I think, somewhere it's in the neighborhood of 60% sold now with futures and cash. We increased the cash to 35% and then added some futures. We also like selling some calls against that. We sold the 440 corn calls and sold some $12 bean calls. I'm a little nervous about the bean calls because the beans aren't falling apart, but I thought the chances of getting new highs in corn would take an actual visible deterioration in corn ratings that would tell us that, and I think that's out of the question now. So we'll hold those short calls and see how that works. But that was a stretch getting over 50% covered because a lot of our clients didn't want to do that, you know, especially when it was so bullish at that time. But we lucked out, and now we can relax a little bit, I guess. But it still says that the other 40%, you know, is worth less. And you're not a real hero to anybody unless you sold 110%, you know, and that's difficult.
It is a long ways from now until harvest, so
that's
much
true
to follow
yep.
through.
Yep. If the heat comes back way, someone at the Florida or at the Board of Trade told me today that you can do a lot of damage to corn after pollination if you don't have the moisture to fill those kernels. So we're not there yet, so maybe we got another shot at it.
Hey, thanks so much, Jerry.
You bet. Thank you.
Jerry Gulke, of course, is with the Gulke Group out of Chicago, Illinois. He joins us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm coming to you from the CME Group in Chicago. Find us online and listen to Jerry again if you'd like at WILLAG.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on a Wednesday afternoon. Coming to you today from the National Association of Farm Broadcasters meeting at the CME Group in Chicago, 20 South Wacker Drive. Tim Andreessen is here. He's the Managing Director of Agricultural Products for the CME Group and a native of East Central Illinois. In fact, for us in Urbana, you're really close by.
Yeah, I grew up in Rantoul. My dad was in the Air Force, retired there, and then I spent a good amount of time in the grain business in that part of the country.
What is your job here?
So as managing director, I'm responsible for the agricultural products. At CME, we have six different asset classes: foreign exchange, equities, interest rates, metals, energy and agriculture. So I'm responsible for the agricultural products. So that's our futures, our options on livestock, dairy, grains and oil seeds, and some other miscellaneous things.
There are about 15 farm broadcasters from around the nation, and when I say around the nation, from Texas all the way through the East Coast, here today. You're going to tell them about something that most people don't discuss. It's the ecosystem of the CME Group and trades. What is that exactly in your mind?
Well, so if you think about it, you know, we look at the market, we see a number come out. But, you know, one of the important things that you have to have in a market, one of the roles of a market is risk transfer. And you need to have those people who are taking on that risk. So, you know, it's not just the producer and the end user of a consumer or the people in the middle, but it's also people that are known as market makers or, in you know, locals who are part of that process, who absorb that risk to facilitate hedging by the commercials.
That has changed in the last 5 years, as if you've gone from a pit or open outcry to electronic trade. How has that really changed for the CME Group? And the combination of the CME Group and the Chicago Board of Trade also had some influence.
Well, certainly as you've gone electronic, you no longer have people just standing around in a pit. You know, you now have a diverse range of people. You could see market makers in New York. You could see market makers in Australia who are creating liquidity in our markets. So the location is very different because you don't have to have the proximity of standing there in the pit.
For our listeners and end users, farmers, who are trying to market grain, oftentimes they would call brokers and the brokers would call to the floor, and that would be the ecosystem that gave them the market maker. That's lost. Has that been able, or are there ways to replace that? Brokers are still looking for possibilities.
Well, keep in mind, they can still do that with our options. We still trade and have options pits that are a very vibrant part of our eco-structure. But, you know, what you have now is you have a situation where you can still call a broker. And as a matter of fact, you know, for people who are hedgers, having a good broker is one of the key parts of having the ecosystem, is having somebody that can help you make the right decisions. It's just that now those orders are typically being put in electronically as opposed to them picking up the phone and calling somebody.
How hard have the banking regulations, other regulations on trade that have come out of Washington, D.C., been on this ecosystem?
Well, you know, one of the challenges that we have is that, you know, if we go back to the whole Dodd-Frank situation, our markets functioned perfectly. You know, we had all of these issues with banks failing. You had issues with the OTC markets having issues. The futures markets didn't. So, you know, one of our challenges has been being an advocate for agriculture and for the futures markets in an environment where regulators some of the time don't separate those things out so well. So, you know, what we've had to do is spend a lot of time helping educate people in Washington how the ag markets are different and how some of the rules that they're trying to make could, you know, negatively impact users of our products, agricultural users of our product. And I think we've been reasonably successful in getting that done.
Fred Simon will be presenting here at the NAFB's CME Group Market Masters program. And he'll probably talk, I would think, a little bit about the new EU wheat contract. How important is this to the CME Group to reach across the Atlantic Ocean?
Well, you know, the EU wheat contract helps pull together the portfolio of products we have. So right now, if you look at Globex, which is our trading platform, on it is our soft red winter wheat contract. That was the legacy CBT contract. Several years ago, we acquired the Kansas City Board of Trade, so we have a hard red wheat contract. Minneapolis Grain Exchange contract trades on Globex, although it's their contract. So we have North America pretty well covered. We've had a lot of outreach from our customers in Europe, many of whom trade those products and have said, we would like to have an offering from you in Europe that we can then capture the efficiencies of trading on Globex, of having margin offsets and those sort of things. So that contract is really important to us because, you know, we feel it starts to build even more the global profile of our product set.
I'll ask this factually, though I know it's not quite this way. Is it hoped that adding the EU wheat contract will make the soft red winter wheat contract more reflective of what happens with SRW? Because it has appeared to be a global contract, relatively speaking, in recent years.
Yeah. So that's an interesting question because, one of the things that people look at for trading is liquidity. And that contract has the greatest liquidity of any wheat contract. Our goal is to, give people, particularly commercial hedgers, alternatives. But I think you're going to continue to see people always lead toward liquidity. You know, one of the challenges you have as a hedger is trading off liquidity for specificity. So if I want to, hedge, for example, Canadian wheat, the Board of Trade contract might not be the perfect correlation to wheat in Canada, but people are willing to give up maybe a little bit of correlation because of the fact that you have such deep liquidity there.
And finally, how is it that you work with university systems, other systems, your own in-house ways to teach marketing to students and or farmers and consumers and users?
Well, we've had a long history of working in the educational system, and recently it goes from, very young people with our commodity carnival program to our collegiate trading challenge, which gives colleges around the world an opportunity to learn how to trade. We think it's important that people understand how these products work. Probably the most important node in all this, though, and the place that you see us least, but we have a lot of impact, is through brokers. And through people who are actually dealing with producers day in and day out, providing them with information about products and the tools to be more effective in educating their customers.
Mr. Andreessen, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Tim Andreessen is with the CME Group in Chicago. We're here with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from the University of Illinois.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities Incorporated, headquartered in Lafayette, Indiana, with branches in Chalmers, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois, providing independent commodity, financial, and currency analysis to its clients and newsletter subscribers. On the web at myrmconline.com.
It's National Almond Butter Crunch Day. It's also Feast Day of St. Peter, patron saint of fishermen, bakers, and harvesters. On this day in agricultural history in 1943, General Dwight D. Eisenhower requested that Coca-Cola provide 10 portable bottling plants for U.S. troops overseas. Eisenhower's telegram requested 3 million bottles of Coca-Cola, complete equipment for bottling, washing, and capping 3 million bottles twice a month, and sufficient syrup and caps for 6 million refills. In 1956, now President Dwight D. Eisenhower signed the Interstate Highway Act, which made possible the modern interstate highway system in the U.S. The act committed federal funds to the states for 90% of interstate highway construction. By the way, three states, Missouri, Kansas, and Pennsylvania, lay claim to the first to take advantage of the act. In 2004, Roy Wofford died, an American pathologist. He pioneered and wrote books on the idea of restricting food intake to extend lifespan. And in 2005, the USDA confirmed the second domestic case of mad cow disease in the U.S. The 12-year-old cow was born in Texas and spent its whole life on the same ranch. The first case, discovered in December of 2003, was in a dairy cow that had been imported from Canada. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm Todd Gleason at the CME Group 20 South Wacker Drive in Chicago, along with the National Association of Farm Broadcasting. We're now joined by Drew Lerner. He's at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon to you, Drew. Thanks for being with us for the day.
Thank you very much. It's a wonderful day across the Midwest today.
It's a beautiful day. However, farmers across a good portion of Illinois and Missouri, parts of Iowa, would really like a rainfall. From what I've seen, it appears there may be one coming.
There is hope here for that, indeed. We're just looking at that today. It's not just an isolated forecast model or two that are suggesting this rain event. They seem to be very consistent around the world about this event. So we're talking about the Canadian model, the Japanese model, anything you can think of, they all seem to have this event. So indeed, from Nebraska and Kansas into the heart of Illinois and on over into northern and central Ohio, during the period from Friday into Monday, we'll probably see a nice rain event. Now, the big question is just how nice is nice. Some of the model data today at midday was suggesting some incredible rain amounts, getting upwards to 3 to 7 inches possibly in a part of central Illinois and then 2 to 4 inches surrounding it. But I don't know that I'm going to buy into the specifics of the amounts quite yet, since this is still a couple of days away. But I do like the setup, and I do think that we will see some rain. And, boy, you couldn't ask for better timing with the start of reproduction now taking place in some of these areas that have been so dry. Missouri and Illinois in particular have been hurting the most, and it looks like there's going to be relief. Now, southernmost Illinois may not do as well as central parts of the state, and the same may be true for southeastern Missouri and southward into the Delta area. These areas will probably be missed, and the droughty conditions that are evolving will probably continue.
All in all, some places will be better off than they have been, that is for sure. What's your forecast further out?
Well, I do think that as we get behind this event, we'll see a little mini ridge of high pressure developing at midweek next week that will send temperatures skyrocketing, and we'll probably see a lot of 90-degree temperatures back across the heart of the Midwest for a couple of days. And then another frontal system should settle down from Canada and bring us another short-term bout of somewhat milder air, not as cool as we've got right now. But there will be another opportunity for some rain to move through a portion of the Midwest along with that frontal system. So it looks like for the next 7 days, we have an opportunity here for timely rain. So later in the month of July, it'll probably get a bit drier and a bit more stressful again, especially in the southwestern Corn Belt, in the areas that had been really dry, like Kansas, Missouri, and southwest Illinois, and back towards Nebraska. And I think these areas will get that way again. But it's going to be a slow process, just simply because we are going to get some rain here in the near term for part of the forecast.
Hey, Drew, thanks so much for being with us today. Really appreciate it.
All right, have a good afternoon.
You too. Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, dedicated to improving the quality of life for Illinois farmers by offering financial products and services geared specifically to the farm community and developing partnership-based relationships with its agricultural customers, helping farm families succeed for 100 years.